This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guests on Off the Shelf are Bill Gormley. Bill is the President of the Gormley Group, and Tom Sisti. Tom is Chief Legislative Counsel for SAP. And guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us. It's like old home week here.
Hey, Roger, I'm glad to see you didn't have a delay because of weather today, so that's good. Good to be here.
Thanks. We've had several of those, haven't we, over the last...
That's right.
So, yeah, it has been kind of a rough day. But now it's all fun here. We're going to talk about acquisition reform, and this show will sort of marks the beginnings of a series of shows over the next several months. Sort of the 2014 contract procurement reform series that we'll be talking about: acquisition reform, procurement reform. What does it take? What should it look like? But this first show with Tom and Bill, we're going to focus on really just sort of the big picture from a policy perspective. Tom's going to talk from a policy perspective, his experience working on the Hill and driving acquisition policy as a staffer. And Bill's going to talk about the organizational change and how to manage that change and sort of identify opportunities to reform organizations and how to carry that out. So, guys, I'm looking forward to this conversation. Mm-hmm. And I guess my first question is sort of I don't know if it's, one of these real, theoretical, what is reform? When we think of reform, what are we trying to accomplish? Or because reform is the eye of the beholder. Sometimes it could mean, making it harder to do business, right, in our government. And other times it means streamlining it. And, from your perspective, what do you think reform really ought to be about? Whoever wants to take the first shot, age over beauty. Bill, go ahead.
That means I'm younger, I guess. Anyway, let's go for it. Anyway, thank you, Roger. Appreciate the opportunity here. On reform, I think I think you covered a couple areas we're going to talk about today. One is like organizational impact on reform. Then you have policy reform. And I think, Tom will be better at this than I am, but on the policy side of, when it goes to the Hill. But as far as an organizational reform, I think you have to keep we all have to keep in mind that when you step back, I think all ideas work, okay? And I think it's when you take the following step from ideas to having discussion and then starting to develop ways to improve whatever you're trying to improve. In this case, we're talking acquisition, obviously. But I think it's important to have in that discussion people with experience and not just with the ideas. And I think a lot of the policy now is, unfortunately, over the past few years, are just continuing to layer on additional requirements, in this case for industry, but not only for industry, but also for government, the contracting, the whole overall contracting community. And without the recognition of what's the impact going to be, and is it just a good idea in the sense of discussion, but what's at the end of the day, is it the right thing for the taxpayer? And the right thing for the taxpayer is not just low cost, it's best value. And it's also, is the government going to get what it wants? I mean, we're not going to get into the healthcare website and all that, but I think that's an obviously example. It's on everyone's mind about how can the government do things better. So I'm sure there'll be reform. Some reform may want to come out of that. But I really don't. I personally think that that's not procurement is not the real issue there.
Right. Okay. And as much reform is done, reform by anecdote, right? The bad headline or whatever leads to a reaction, that leads to change, and that's more sort of in the lawmaking arena there, Tom. How would you address the question? What is reform?
Let me say up front. Let me give you my disclaimer that my views don't necessarily reflect the views of my company, but I think that we have focused many, many times in the history of reform on process. That reform has been about procedures of acquisition from notification or requirements development out to award and out to contract administration and then contract closeout. And we've been very much focused around those issues to the extent that we have seen, I mean, it's no secret, we've seen restatements of the law sometimes in acquisition reform efforts, you know, restatements of commercial items. But, you know, there are themes that come back, and we keep coming back to those themes. And so it says, it should be signaling to us that there are other things at play in the acquisition process and that are in need of a reform than simply the way we do things. You know, just take an example. You go back to 1969, the Commission on Procurement. They talked about the professional development of acquisition personnel. You go to the Grace Commission, talked about sound business practices by acquisition personnel. You talk about the 1980s, the Packard Commission, delegating responsibility to acquisition professionals. I mean, that's how do you go from 1969 to the hearings on the Hill a couple of months ago, where we talked about really trying to support the acquisition personnel with resources and training and professional development and career paths? How do you go that long and still have that come up as an issue? That says we're not doing something. We're not addressing either the incentives that drive the acquisition process, the conflicting policies that may drive, not necessarily conflicting, but sometimes conflicting, sometimes adjacent policies that accompany the acquisition process. We're just not zeroing in on what needs to be reformed.
Right. Well, you know, when you're telling that story about the acquisition professional, it seems to and the developer non-development is support, non-support. Mm-hmm. You know, just sort of off tangent, but when we look at the system right now, isn't one of the biggest things just the whole gotcha mentality? It's worse than it's ever been, in the sense that, you know, I think a lot of acquisition professionals seem like they're caught in the middle. They're being asked to do more without more, and then at the same time, you know, they try to do something. There's a you know, we've talked a lot about it, Bill. Look, what's risk?
I think risk. Yeah, I think it's where we're heading here is risk. I think risk is associated with anything. You know, you take a risk walking across the street. So someone, you know, if you got hit by a car, someone said, "Well, you shouldn't have left when you did," mm-hmm. or "You should have seen the car come." I mean, so it's relevant. And I think the point here is, unfortunately, I think what we're seeing, and let me pause for a moment. Everyone here agrees that there's a need for the OIG.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so there's no...
Absolutely.
That's... Let's take that kind of...
off the table.
Okay, all right? Yeah. There's a need. It's valid. I think what's happening is that there's clearly an overreach, probably for a lot of different reasons. And I think the fact that if someone makes a mistake or even an organization makes a mistake, it doesn't mean that you need to make a change that affects that whole organization. You address where the mistake was. And it pretty much boils down to leadership anyway. And I think the providing a leadership that gives the environment that allows risk. And we're not being, we're not saying risk for the sake of everybody go be risky about, you know, the contracts they award. Everybody's going to follow pretty much the necessary requirements they need in order to award a valid contract and a fair and reasonable contract here. So, but I think now the atmosphere and the climate, however you want to categorize it, is pro IG, and if you don't agree with me, then something's wrong with you. And I think that's where the contracting community is really put into a bind right now. And I think that has to be addressed. And I know that's dicey, Roger and Tom, but there's a need for that, because you need to take risk in order. Every business and every government agency, in order to carry out their mission, risk is associated with that, and the more risk you take out, the less innovation you're going to get, and I think that is a detriment to the taxpayer.
Yeah, it's balancing risk, you know, in operations versus oversight, and make sure you have that right balance. But and to me, you know, one of the things you're really talking about here, it's not really the OIG, it's management of the agencies, right? that plays that key role. I mean, the inspector generals have their, you know, have their responsibilities and have their roles. I don't blame them for, you know, doing their jobs theoretically, but it's a question of getting out of balance and whether or not, in a certain sense, you know, nature abhors a vacuum, something fills it, and sort of what's filled it in the current environment is oversight. And, you know, and to me, one of the reforms we need to think about is how you get that balance back. Any thoughts, Tom?
Well, I think, I think you have to, we can't get rid of the IGs. We need the IGs.
Yeah. Nobody's saying that.
No, I think, and, you know, I came from the committee, you know, back when that, you know, worked with the IGs. So, I think it's a question of where are we focusing? Just going to Bill's point on risk.
Hey, Tom, you know what? Right now, I'm sorry, you can come back to your point on risk when we come back from the break. But right now, we do have to take a break. My guests today are Bill Gormley of the Gormley Group and Tom Sisti, Chief Legislative Counsel for SAP. And when we come back, we'll let Tom finish his thought about risk. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Shouldn't a workstation live up to its billing? If yours are no longer working, there's Initiate from the Han Company. Initiate workstations are easy to order, install, and reconfigure. Components fit precisely and provide endless ways for space planners to arrange people. Initiate is also highly sustainable, helping reduce your environmental footprint. Initiate workstations, inspired by the practical needs of the workplace. Online at han.com. That's H-O-N.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are a couple folks who regularly appear here on the show. Tom Sisti, he's Chief Legislative Counsel for SAP, and Bill Gormley, President of the Gormley Group. And guys, when we took that break, Tom, you were about to provide your thoughts on risk and its role in an organization or a machine, I guess.
Yeah, Go ahead. That's what I was going to say. And I think you alluded to it in your Friday Flash last week. The, you know, if you look at engineering a machine or anything like that, there are tolerances for your specifications. You can be within a certain distance, if you will, of the perfect specification, because there's an understanding there are going to be variances of some sort. And I mean, you have to tolerate some deviation in a system that involves human beings. They're not perfect. They're not on an assembly line. There's discretion involved, and we want that discretion involved because it goes back to what Bill was saying. You want innovation. You want people thinking creatively to try, especially in this environment. And I want to say something about the environment. You know, we've been talking about reform efforts. I mean, when you're going back to 1969 or 1945, the Hoover, you know, you're talking about processes and systems that served another century. We're in a different time now. We have technologies that didn't exist before. We have demands that are very, very rapid and very, very complex. We're in an incredibly tight budget environment. So all of these things come together and really drive us to rethink, revisualize, if you will, how we want the system to work and how we want to use it and what our goals are for it.
Right. Well, and you know, one of the things that
can I ask Tom, sure, a question? Tom, how long does it? I mean, when you're on the Hill, how long? You talk about all the changes in technology, but isn't there a fundamental process that policy has to go through to actually get changed? I mean, is there any? I don't know if there's any timeline on it or something that's standard, but it doesn't just happen in one setting of Congress or something
one session. Well, you know. Look at FASA.
Okay.
All right. Federal Acquisition Streamlining Act of 1994.
All right.
That's
well,
my job as a host. Okay. I get to.
Well, if you go back, remember the Section 800 panel, 1990. They spent, how long did they spend? Maybe a couple of years, couple, 3 years reviewing that. Now, that was a panel set up, funded, certainly staffed at the Defense Acquisition University. It included experts in procurement from multiple disciplines, multiple stakeholder venues, if you will, private sector, public sector, et cetera. And these people came together, reviewed hundreds and hundreds of procurement laws, came out with changes that probably resulted in several, maybe 200 to 300, somewhere in that range, changes in law and procurement laws and regulation. I remember ship degaussing statutes, lighter than air aircraft, that kind of thing. Then it came back to the Hill. Hill staffs came together, reviewed that, probably a better part of a year. And then, of course,
in a bipartisan manner. Right?
Yes, it was. It was bipartisan, multi-committee. So you had multiple stakeholders involved in this process. And then, you know, it got aligned with the National Performance Review. Remember back then?
Yes, I do.
And ultimately, we had a law that was signed in the fall of '94, as I recall. So, I mean, this was a thoughtful, deliberate, multi-year effort. And I think we can all understand the zeal to address problems, especially high-profile problems, whatever they are, in the acquisition system, and you want to move fast. But if you're talking about a systemic change, if you're talking about taking the process, deconstructing it, and reconstructing it for a new time with different resources and different responsibilities, you need to take the time to review it. And I think I don't mean that in a critical way with respect to anything that might be pending. I'm just saying this is one way that is proven effective. I think FASA was pretty effective. Service Acquisition Reform Act, even go maybe 10 years later, 8 years later, that law, we impaneled people to take a look. You sat on it.
Right.
You can tell it better than I can. So, you have deliberate reflection on what is facing the procurement community. That is probably a better way to affect a change in policy than to do it in response, to current events, even though there are legitimate concerns with respect to current events.
So I guess what I'm hearing that changing policy is, I guess this is now you're making me think, why it costs more to remodel a house than it does to build a new one. I mean, you're having to facilitate the occupation of the house, meaning you have to facilitate the workforce of contracting people and systems out there while you're making these changes. So there's a lot of connectivity that has to be addressed for any policy changes, right? So this is, for the listeners, why does it take government years? I'm kind of counting them up while you're going through this, Tom, and it's a deliberative process, and I guess for a reason, yet I would argue that I think the FAR, we have debate on this. I think the FAR basically is sound.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's latitude in there for the contracting community to get its job done. And this is where I always have Tom mentions a great point of, there's a reaction to when something occurs that no one likes, that we have to change it, or we have to demonstrate that we're not going to tolerate it. I think just going back to the source of the situation and addressing it and moving on is better for the whole community, instead of just getting, what they call it, above the fold or below the fold of the newspapers and trying to get, bad publicity out there. When's the last time anybody read a positive report on contracting? We don't see it. And with the social media and everything, people aren't really interested. But that's, they're dealing with, I don't know, was it $600 billion a year or $700 billion a year, contracting dollars, and this is a big business out there. And there's more right about it than wrong. And I think we get caught up in that.
Well, it's interesting because, there's a piece that sort of underlies this, and it's culture. We talk a lot about how to fix the process, and we restate the process. And I talked a little while ago about acquisition, helping the acquisition workforce. If you don't work with the culture, you can keep changing this till the cows come home. It's not going to get better. And that means you have to involve those stakeholders. So involve the inspector general, involve the committees of oversight. I mean, these things have implications for the way we actually do our oversight. We have committees that sometimes have overlapping jurisdiction, so maybe that needs to be revisited as well. I mean, of course, that's like saying, and we should cure, world hunger, but
right.
Yeah, but still, it's something that ought to be on the table, because if you don't address the issues of culture, you don't help people assimilate into the system that you're visualizing going forward.
Right. One of the things that strikes me when you guys are talking about it, and you talk about whether it's whether it's, you know, acquisition or workforce over time continues to be an issue. You know, you hear this, or we have a new economy, but we always do sort of seem to circle back to the same issues. I've heard more lately from government folks about, oh, it takes too long to buy my IT. By the time I get around to buying it, it's changed already. I mean, we were having these conversations back in, right, Tom?
Yes.
Back in the early 90s. This is the same issue. And to your point, Bill, about the FAR, one of the things I keep thinking of the story back when I was at GSA and I was working for, it's called the Federal Computer Acquisition Center. We just got a call one day out of the blue. This talk about culture, the ideas of like, how do we streamline processes or look at our organizational structures. Just got a call one day from the general counsel of the agency. And we were sitting with some other procurement folks. I was their attorney. And basically we were tasked, figure out how you could like buy in a completely different manner that would save a lot of money. Look at the regulations and see what you can do. So we just sat down and had brainstorming sessions for about 2 days to try to come up with a new model within the context of the regulations. And we did, at least, and even if nothing came out of it, it was a good exercise because it made us stop and think about how our organization was working, you know, at that point, in any event, under the current rules. So,
yeah, I think there you're talking about the operational level.
Yes. Yes, Bill.
So I think the people at the operational level, you know, are not being brought in through all levels. And I think it's
right. Hey, Bill, right now I have to bring in a commercial break. So when we come
operational.
Back, that's an operational move right there. So, so when we come back, we'll be talking more to Bill Gormley, president of the Gormley Group, and Tom Sisti, chief legislative counsel for SAP, about, you know, reform and what does it mean? And we'll focus on organizations and how they're run and how they can change over time. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
These days, it seems everyone's talking about the new normal, but federal agencies have a chance to define it. How will you shape your future? Turn to Deloitte. We understand what makes America work and how it can work better. With our private sector insight and public sector experience, we can help you rethink, reduce, and restructure, or even change the game. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Tom Sisti, Chief Legislative Counsel for SAP, and Bill Gormley, President of the Gormley Group. And Bill, I had to interrupt you because we had an operational moment there with our advertising, but and having to take a break. But I wanted to give you a chance to finish your thought on, you know, start your thought on, you know, organizations and operations and making change on that level.
Yeah, I think from whether it's the government or private sector, I mean, you know, you can put policies out there, and the policies are either going to create a culture change of some sort is what typically you're trying to do. But I think what is happening now, there's a lot of unfortunate fear put into the workforce, which I think is very unproductive. We talked a little bit about risk earlier, Roger. I think it reduces the risk to being almost zero. It's slowing the process down. And I think what you want is performance. And performance, if you look at it as an athletic team, you know, you want everybody to be excited about the game day in and day out, or game in, game out, whether they're practicing or whether it's a real game. But in the contracting world, I think the key here is, you know, I think leadership needs to show an interest in the overall objective here of the organization, and not the gotcha mentality, which, you know, unfortunately, in several agencies and departments, you get that feeling when you talk to people, and particularly right. from a contracting community, is seeing it because of the the way some procurements are going. You know, LPTA, low price technically acceptable, and yes, everybody wants to get a good deal for government, but that really is to take almost create a zero risk environment. And yet I think what happens there, it was one example for an organization
for the individual running the procurement, but in the long run, it's a bigger risk for the government.
Yes, I think it ends up, yes, costing the government money. So we can maybe that's a whole segment on that. But anyway, I think but the organization, I think, is kind of getting back to this. The tone of the org, the tone of the leadership does flow down throughout, no, I shouldn't say down, but throughout the organization. And I think that really impedes, you know, a high-functioning organization. And just from a personal standpoint, you know, it's years ago, but it's still the same flow. You know, when I was managing an organization, it took me, you know, 3 months, but I ended up talking to 100% of the employees. Now, that's a rarity, and I understand, you know, a lot of people can't do that. But I want to take the time. But not only did I talk to him once, but I talked to him several times. And I know you always like that. You always like to hit me up on the S-curve. And right. So from a business planning standpoint, at least people in government and in industry, you know, we use this S-curve. So, you know, we always look to the third curve to say, hey, what's out there that is like the next revolution of how we do things today, and how do we get to it? And it's not a matter of whether we hook onto that third curve, but it's the feeling of an excitement of wanting to do something better. And I think, you know, with the oversight and the layer of the amount of oversight we have now, is really diminished that kind of spirit, you know, of adventure. And I know it's hard to get excited about acquisition unless you're sitting here with you and Tom and
a few of us around here. Absolutely. And our listening audience out there, our loyal listening audience.
But I mean,
all seven.
But no, now.
Right. At the end of the day, I think, you know, acquisition is a great field and can be exciting. And so I think that we've kind of lost that right now, and down to a zero tolerance has created that.
Yeah, right. I think, and you know, it's interesting because Bill is onto something here. I can envision that some people listening would say, okay, these guys just don't want oversight. They want to do whatever they want. And that's not what people are saying. What we're saying is that you have to find a way to deliver that oversight in a manner that doesn't impede this small group of people. Think about one program. If you have one program that's causing a problem, or you have questions on, not even causing a problem, and you theoretically could have either a GAO audit, nothing against that. It could be either on GAO's own, or it could be requested. It could be requested by maybe one, maybe two committees. I mean, think about FTS 2000. Go back. You know, I can remember being doing FTS oversight for my boss as a staffer, and then our sister committee in the House was doing that as well. So right now you have three entities. You could have another subcommittee doing some oversight. You could have, take it out of the civilian realm, you could also have an audit agency coming in. I mean, there has to be a way to coordinate this better, so that it is not drawing on the resources of one entity that might be trying to perform, you know. And I think the danger of not fixing that is what we're starting to see. Remember the Mythbusters memo that came out a couple of years ago?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And one of the elements was, hey, it's okay to communicate. It's okay, government, to communicate with the vendors.
Right.
Well, my gosh, that was written into law, okay? I saw something today, a posting online, where somebody said it would be great if the government could pass a law so that they could buy commercial items off the shelf. And I almost filed my chair. What, you know, FAR Part 15, we have this.
Part 12.
Part 12, excuse me. Yeah. We have this, and we have, you know, go in and look at the definition of a commercial item, commercial server, remember, all of that.
Yep.
Oh, it's absolutely in statute. I think that what can happen over time is that you can have a system that easily retreats because it's better not to get smacked, you know?
Right.
Yeah, but see, Tom, you said that Mythbuster got written into law. And so, you know, here we are in an acquisition community where I'm not sure how you can do your job without talking to your sources of supply.
Right.
Or having them, having a conversation with them just to understand, you know, what's the right set of requirements to get the job done or to get whatever you're acquiring. And so if you got to write Mythbuster into a law, that right there is a signal of just thinking through this, that now we have to be told that it's a good thing to talk. And that's I think that's, you know, we're out of step here. Yeah. We're clearly out of step. And this is not, to me, it's not a big change to, it's not going back either. So I'm not even trying to infer that because there's social media out there now. In fact, you should have more discussion, easier discussion. A lot of people are, you know, work from home, and, you know, it's kind of hard to have a contractor come in your house or something like that. I mean, those are so where does it stop? So, And not that it should, but the key here is it should be more, and it shouldn't be viewed as improper. You have to be able to talk to your source of supply. You know, the private sector would die if it was in this type of strained relationship because of lack of communication.
Well, I mean, think about this. Think about the technology refresh cycle on information technology. I mean, if you can't communicate, how do you ever have requirements drafted that meet that are on the front end of the curve? You know, it's bad enough that in some instances, for instance, in the defense community, you have to make your funding decisions in advance of your program decisions. How do you do that? Everybody's sort of shooting in the dark. And then we yell at the program and acquisition officials who are doing the best they can in this construct when they're out of sync. It doesn't make sense.
So what role does a budget profile play in all these going on?
Well, I think the CR, and I don't think the CR is the new norm. I think the last budget that was actually approved on time was 1997. So if you think about it, whether personal lives or running a company, so you're really straining the acquisition workforce by the government turns its lights on every day. And so it has to have, you know, it has needs in order to do that. Contracting needs have to be met to keep the government up and running. Yeah, you know, a lot of people don't look at it that way, but, you know, and then you kind of tell the acquisition community what you need, but you don't have the money yet. But yet you, in some cases, it strains the contract relationships of people having to get paid later and having already delivered the services. So that's, you know, when that happens, you know, it's not, it doesn't bode well for either party here. And I think, you know, Congress obviously takes a hit here a little bit for not getting the budget approved on time. And I know there's a lot of members that talk about themselves running companies or so forth and so on. But at the end of the day, the budget. And so now it falls back on industry. And then the contracting community is trying to figure out how to hurry up and get its requirements out once the CR gets passed. And it's just it's catch up all year long, and then it's a sprint in the fourth quarter.
Catch up and you never really do catch up, right? But right now we have to take our last break. When we come back, we'll be talking more to Tom Sisti, Chief Legislative Counsel for SAP, and Bill Gormley, President of the Gormley Group. And I'm going to ask Bill, you know, if he, as a change agent when he was at GSA, you know, how he sort of tackled it, what was his priorities? Talked a little bit about communication with his employees at the time, back in the day, but we'll get those thoughts. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The mission of government involves critical efforts to improve national defense, economic security, health services, and citizens' lives. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton are proud to help government address cyber threats, reform the financial system, modernize infrastructure, and protect our nation. For nearly 100 years, Booz Allen has partnered with clients to deliver results that endure. To see Booz Allen's ideas in action, visit BoozAllen.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Bill Gormley, President of the Gormley Group, and Tom Sisti, Chief Legislative Counsel for SAP. And Bill, when we took the break, I wanted to give you an opportunity now to start this segment by talking about sort of as a change agent, as someone who led organizations during what's viewed as a very innovative period in government procurement with, you know, a lot of the streamlining that was done, the GSA Schedules Program, you know, the National Performance Review, the Hammer Awards, all that kind of thing during the, you know, second half of the 90s. You know, just, you know, sort of how did you approach it? What were your priorities? What were the indications that you were making progress, kind of thing? That's a lot of things, but you can tackle them as you choose.
It's positive pressure. I like that.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, all right. Reform. To be honest with you, some things that we'd been trying to get changed. We queued them all up and reform came along and boom, we used that as the opportunity. So the environment from the administration at the time basically hosted the capability of us getting things through that were in the queue. So that's number one. So I think we can say is the climate.
That was like the 90 post 96
timeframe,
right?
And so the administration set the tone,
right?
Hey, we want to be a better government, okay? And so we would give, we will recognize folks in government, you know, personally, not for the recognition, just to, you know, I think we had a, you know, a great opportunity. And as an organization, you know, we wanted to take advantage of that climate. That climate change, so to speak, if you want to get into that. But anyway, and answer your, a couple things that I would always be, try to keep myself both feet on the ground going through organizational changes, Roger. One is keep it very simple. Keep it very, every organization, government and private sector can be better. That has to be understood. It's not that where we were at was wrong. It can be better. So the theme was that we want to get better. And who doesn't want to get better? Okay. So that's kind of that set the culture right there. And the other one is I kept it simple in regards to we did not have a lot of performance indicators. I know there's going to be a lot, probably something's going to come back to me on this, but I'm not a big proponent of indicators because I think indicators drive unintended consequences. And I'm going to say all of them, but a lot of them do. And they can always, you know, you can look at, hey, would we like to have, 90% contract coverage on time? Heck yeah, why not 100? Okay. But the point is, if you start measuring that, the unintended consequences are earlier rejections, things won't get done for administrative reasons, people aren't going to talk where they could clear things up and have a natural course of business. Everybody's focused on that meter of how close am I getting to being late and then being penalized.
They're not really looking out. When you measure those type of things, right, you start acting in a manner that gets you to your personal goal, which is to make sure you're processing them in X amount of time. And that means rejecting them early when you could take further steps to take a look at things. That I don't get rewarded for that. I get rewarded for how quickly I process them. So I'm rejecting. Is that clear? Did I fumble over that?
In many cases, not everybody, but a lot of people are thinking from a performance, from their annual performance. I mean, it actually gets, now we're trying to boil the ocean here in a short period of time. So I don't want to get to that, you know,
level.
Microwave for it or something. But anyway, the key here is there's a lot that goes behind it. I'm just trying to give you the overall, you have to be people oriented and you have to welcome people criticizing. I took a lot of criticism through the changes that we went through, but I loved it because criticism told me people cared about what they were doing. And if we were off in some fashion, I wanted to know about it early. I didn't want to get caught down the road and like, well, that's what you wanted. And so that is, there's a balance here in the fulcrum, I think. I always try to balance things out, is people want to feel comfortable about their leadership and that they can approach them, have a conversation, and there's no, I mean, they're not playing off each other. Okay.
Sure, sure.
So there's a truism here of the objective of leadership is wanting to really make the environment or create an environment that meets or is headed towards meeting or exceeding the mission of the agency or department, or in my case, the Office of Acquisition. And so I think we had a great time overall. I mean, people still call me to this day and wish they could go rock and roll again or something. And that's a compliment for me personally, just to have that conversation. On the other hand, you have the side where, you know, some people didn't like all the changes. So let's talk about that. It's not, you know, it's not 100% all in here.
Right.
And some people wanted to stay with where we were. And I had conversations with them. We had conversations together. And I welcomed it. But some of it's pure philosophical on why are we getting away from a federal specification for what is considered a commercial office product, as one example, or furniture. And I'm like, why are we spending taxpayer dollars to do that when we can go get equal or better. So that is not an easy, it's an easy conversation here, but I try to put myself in the other person's seat, listen to it, hear it out. But at the end of the day, we were moving forward with commercial practices. Okay. And people, I mean, we moved some organizations from, in one case, it was a paint and chemicals. And now they're doing 100% professional services. Okay. And so that was a tough move for those individuals, but as an example, and there was others too. But I think the key is I made sure from a leader standpoint that I was there or available to have discussions, to meet, to talk about it, and to see it all the way through. This was not, it wasn't time tested from the standpoint of we got so much time to do this. Anything that got better any day, I feel better about it from a leadership, and I communicate it to the employees.
Tom?
Yeah, I just think you're creating a culture where there isn't fear, there isn't denigration, that people understand that this is a collaborative process, which is an environment you have to move towards, and that you're encouraging those innovative experiences. If you start clamping down, you don't move forward. Now, it's, you know, people do have comfort zones, and I think that Bill is alluding to that. It's hard to make change because change implies that you have to do something new. But if you can bring it to another level, going back to your S curve, yeah. If you can take it to the top of the next curve or the bottom of the next curve, which is higher up, I mean, I think that's where you start to see the organizational benefits, certainly personal benefits, and then you start seeing performance benefits, government wide. You can't become locked up in form over substance. Now, that doesn't mean you throw the form away, but that it's a balance.
Right. And I think part of, to Tom's point, we wanted to be recognized as an employer of choice. Mm. It may sound a little hokey, but from a supervisor and manager standpoint, and from other people in the other parts of the organization, maybe it created some jealousy or whatever, but a little competitive friendly fire is okay. Mm. But people over time saw, hey, they're getting things done. And to Tom's point, where people were out of their comfort zone, the one thing that they did like and one thing they did recognize is that they were viewed as being with a winner. Yeah. And that took away some of the burr, so to speak, or the edge off of it. It doesn't mean that they were thrilled about it, but it was better than having them to be distraught over something and not having a means of communicating. Yeah, we were willing to have the communication. And that's, I think, where a lot of people don't.
Keep it simple, communicate, the appropriate measures. Appropriate measures.
Appropriate measures means few.
So we got about a minute left, and or maybe a little bit more. We can stretch it maybe. I don't know. We'll see. With regard to the system, I had John Etherton on the show last week, and he made the observation that taking a point that Paul Francis from GAO had made at a hearing, that maybe we have the procurement system we collectively want, given all the various stakeholders. I'd just like to get your quick thoughts on that before we close the show.
Well, I think his testimony talks about that we have a process whose results indicate that it's in equilibrium. And that's an interesting sentence, when you consider everything's in equilibrium. In other words, we have internal procedures, we have socioeconomic goals, we have other types of goals that are on the system, we have acquisition goals in general, we have oversight goals, we have budget goals, we have all of these things that are working at play on one core system, and We seem to always gravitate towards this point, and then everybody throws up their hands and wants another reform movement. Well, he's saying that we've reached optimality. Maybe equilibrium isn't the word. Optimality. The inputs that are
the current inputs
right. That are driving the system. So the question it's a step back to say, what is the system that we want?
Right.
What are those things that are going to drive a new equilibrium or a new optimality in the performance of the system?
Yeah, it's a radio show.
So, yes, it is.
So can I disagree?
Yeah, okay, absolutely. Okay. Sure.
I understand the references and the points here and you know, a lot of brain power here. I understand that, but I think also from the standpoint of, I think as I indicated much earlier, there is adequate policy available today to run a very, you know, streamlined, efficient acquisition programs throughout government. Yes, things can be tweaked. Yes, you can put accessories in the car and all that. But the fundamental motor, the engine behind this thing, the FAR, I think creates a great contracting vehicle opportunity. And the other things can be addressed. But I think to make it like we, you know, we've created what we have today, I think policy-wise, the policy is pretty solid for the most part, and I think it still boils down to the leadership
and execution.
Well, but I don't think that's a disagreement. Right. I don't, because I think
we got to disagree here. Come on.
But I don't think
it is. Ratings for Roger. Right.
It isn't, because it's not that the there's anything wrong with the process, not anything wrong with the FAR. It's the inputs into that. It's how those things are being used. And this goes to your point when you were talking a few minutes ago about performance indicators. I'm not going to function on this. I want program indicators, those types of things.
Sure.
It's how you are leveraging those goals and balancing those goals in the system itself.
Right. And we have to end the show. I'd love to let you guys go at it some more. You know, I've got the boxing gloves over here ready to go. But I want to thank my guests today, Tom Sisti, Chief Legislative Counsel for SAP, and Bill Gormley, President of the Gormley Group. And you have been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.